you guys have any special introduction for this audience? We know that the police Hamiltonian formulation treatment and decomposition is a starting point of quantum-based quantization. But what certainly needs to be motivated is my interest in modified gravity theories. And I'll talk about that in one slide, but let's go on the second slide. I'd like to make a terminological remark. In early works, or in first works on the
Kirill? I'm sorry. Yes. Kirill, this is Marseille. Can you talk louder? I mean, again, we don't hear anything.
Okay, I can hear.
Yeah, we have the same problem.
Thanks.
Is it better now?
Better, but a little bit the same thing, what you just did, a little bit more.
Okay, I'll speak like that. These classes theories were used to I used to call it non-metric gravity, which is perhaps not quite a fortunate term, because later work showed that these classes theories are actually perfectly metric, albeit it's not quite easy to see that, but they do describe metric, spacetime metric, and such particles move in the usual way in this metric along dynamics. So these are perfectly metric theories. For this reason, it's probably better to refer to them as self-dual gravity theories. And to stress, when I talk about modifications, so the departure from GR, I use them modified. So, as a joke, I wanted to mention that if you type SDGR, the abbreviation of the DD, you get self-dual gravity and dual differences. The United Kingdom will never surprise me. It will never stop surprising me. So let's go to the next slide, slide number three. So natural reaction to any talk about modified gravity could be, why should I be interested in modified gravity? What's wrong with the usual one? Well, I myself have such an attitude to any modified gravity activity before I go to
Kirill, yeah. I'm sorry to stop again. Here nobody's understanding a word. We're really in... Is just us in Marseille we're having trouble? Is everybody else listening, hearing well?
No, we also have problem. We can hear Carlos very clearly, but we cannot hear Steven very well.
Similar from perimeter.
Hello?
Pick up, please.
Hello, I can try, but...
Just keep it up. I mean, don't let it decay as we speak.
Okay.
Just talk louder, clearly and louder.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
So again, questions. I'm on slide number three. Indeed, well, we don't even understand the usual GR as well as we would like. There are many things. It's a high theory. There are many things we would like to understand better in it. So why consider any modification of gravity? And so it may seem like all that activity on modified gravity, which is currently considered by many people, on slide number three, there is a list of people. For example, Bettenstein has what we call tensor vector scalar theory, there is a competing series, scalar vector tensor one by Moffat, the brain world with extra dimensions. These series of words by bananas from the initial five series and so on. So what's wrong with GR? Why should we be interested in all these modifications? Slide number four. So what's wrong is many things, and actually we knew about this problem all along. First problem, Einstein GR is non-normalizable. In fact, it was never designed to be classical. Unless you add dark matter and dark energy, you are simply not consistent. It's quite strange to have these two things at the same time. They usually never mention together. It's a problem as we are. audio on the next slide, slide number 5. Okay, well, you're one might like this from much more. We follow it. We take it. We follow it. The main dynamic of it is to control or stand your control. That was a big mistake. I don't think it's going to be very good outcome. Later on,
Namely, the
for So the sensor doesn't have to coincide in the area, in the FOC area, to enter some problem. And you can also know that you have quite a metric, a positive definition, than the metric one that you want to use in the area. So what's the reason for considering this AT? One can do simple count and see that the information encoded in B can be described by a metric, based on metric, and described by metric AT. So let's do this one. B is a triple of the point. So we have three times six numbers to say the same. Exactly the numbers that you use. So bottom line of this slide is that there is a canonical connection of this element by B. Let's go to slide number 17. So the main formulation, the main theorem of Pudansky formulation can be stated as follows. Let's have an SFC bundle on a space-time. Let's have a Lie algebra value 2 form, B, such that the fibrometric HB coincides with the Cartan, with the Cartan SFC invariant line. So we're imposing some restriction on B. And then let's assume that there is a tensor in SF3 tensor SF3, so element of endomorphism of SF3, arbitrary one, prime, such that the curvature of the connection that is obtained using B is phi acting on B itself. So basically, the meaning of this equation is that the curvature of natural B connection is a linear combination of B themselves with arbitrary coefficients. Then the metric GB defined by B is Einstein. More or less, this is also the, this is equivalent to IPFG's linear theorem. I will go on slide number 18. This is the first remark. And the second remark is that this tradition, namely the curvature of some natural connection, is proportional to B, or well, expressible in terms of B, it's a natural generalization of an Einstein condition. I want to emphasize that this is as natural a condition as it can be. We call that Einstein condition for in the usual metric context is that Ricci curvature is proportional to the metric. So suddenly we have generalization in the context of Lie algebra value 2 terms. The natural curvature computed using two Lie algebra value 2 forms is proportional to the Lie algebra value 2 forms. But Pivansky work gave more than just this theory because it gave Lagrangian formulation that leads to that equation and the equation of motion. So let's do slide number 19. It's clear that the relevant Lagrangian will have something to do with the so-called PDF theory. The Lagrangian of the F theory is B, trace B log F. Namely, if we take consider equations of motion obtained by varying respect to A, we get the condition that BA and B that is equal to zero. It's exactly that condition that allowed us to solve for A. However, we cannot just vary this Lagrangian with respect to B because B must satisfy the constraint, namely that fiber mesh is determined by B, but not B. The SF3 invariant line. So we need a constraint term. But given on the next slide, it's actually very well known to this community. So the relevant Lagrange multiplier is just psi ij at the ibj. If one varies with respect to this Lagrange multiplier, we'll contain precisely the equation that bi with bj is proportional to delta ij. Which is exactly the condition of that fiber metric in terms of three there. Let's go to slide number 21. The Einstein equation has become, in this formalism, the statement that F is proportional to B, the coefficients of proportionality are exactly those Lagrange multipliers. This action with just traceless psi in it is not the most general one. One can also add the trace part, so the cosmological constant term, lambda, delta, ij. Then it's useful to see how this theory works. So let's look at equation 7, and again do the count. B, with the condition imposed on it, described only 10 numbers, so 10 components of the metric, plus some gauge freedom, which is relevant. Here we have 18 equations. 7 are well, the algebra really two forms of condition only states, 18 equations. Mm-hmm. 10 of them are Einstein equations, 3 of them are gauge, and 5 other ones are just equations that determine psi. So the Lagrange multipliers are determined by the remaining equations. And once this is done, once they're determined, they turn out to be simply equal to the self-dual part of the vial carriage angle. They're on shell. Mm-hmm. And then lambda gets identified in the cosmological concept, or scalar curvature. So, this was a review of Lebansky formulation. And I've done it in such a way that the modification that I'm going to consider will be very simple and easy to motivate. Let's go to the next slide, slide number 22. Before I consider modify gravity, just some simple physics in mind. So why we're interested in, why we were interested so much in this Lebansky formulation. In Lebansky formulation, gravity is BF theory plus a constraint term, and we understand very well how to quantize BF theory. So we hope that maybe one can understand quantization of gravity, or maybe one can deform quantization of BF theory in some way so that one obtains quantum gravity as a result. And it's one of the motivations for spinform models. And also, you all very well known Ashka-Hamiltonian formulation of GR is the plus-one decomposition of Lebansky action. Okay, so this is, I'm leaving the familiar ground of GR and going to slide number 23, this is, where I start considering modifications. This is funny character. I wanted to. Yeah, this is modified Einstein, yeah. Okay, so we have seen that we're obtaining GR by basically taking very natural equation, namely curvature is proportional to B, so to say, but we were imposing some rather strange conditions from the point of view of that equation. We were basically freezing some degrees of freedom described by B. Namely, freezing the metric, fiber metric, to be a given one. Can we allow it to be dynamical? The answer is yes, very easily. One doesn't need to modify anything at all. One should just consider equation 9, again, which is the statement that f of A, well, A of B, really, is just proportional to B with some tensor in front of it. As it stands, this equation cannot be consistent, which is quite easy to see. There is not enough number of equations to determine all of unknowns. And this is also manifested by the fact that if you consider just some self-consistency conditions on the fields that appear in this equation, then one can see that the psi ij tensor that appears here gets fixed, gets determined, gets related to the fiber metric HB. So basically there is some Bianchi identity that can be derived out of 9 that imposes the relation between psi, that tensor that appears on the right-hand side of this equation, and the fiber metric. I'll study that equation on the next slide. But the point is that you should just take the most natural condition possible, namely F is proportional to B, and free, allow all components of B become dynamical. This is all it turns out to be a very large class of theories, much larger than GR. So let's see what are the conditions relating psi and HB. This is done on slide number 24. Instead of deriving them from self-consistency of that equation, I'll simply state the action principle that leads to those equations. Here is given by equation number 10. As before, psi ij are trace-free, so symmetric trace-free tensor, Lagrange multiplier. The only modification that turns out to be necessary for this generalization is to allow the what used to be cosmological constant, lambda, replaced by a cosmological function, what can be called cosmological function, basically arbitrary function of the traceless tensor psi j. Now, if you vary with respect to psi, and you get an equation that bi was j, which is basically the fiber metric, the delta ij plus the derivative of phi with respect to psi. Now one can solve this equation and trade the psi for hb, or for the traceless part of hb. And this is exactly that relation between psi and h that I was thinking about in the previous slide. So now on slide number 25, again, I state that the main equation of this theory is basically it's number 12. F of A is psi b of b. Psi b is now endomorphism that depends on the fiber metric hb. Now, this equation is, it's again 18 equations, but we have 18 unknowns, because the only thing that appears in this equation, after you express A in terms of B, is B itself. So it's 18 equations for 18 unknowns. The modification is parameterized by a function of two arguments, namely, because it's a scalar function of traceless symmetric matrix, it can only depend on eigenvalues of this matrix, so there are two eigenvalues. Alternatively, it's a function of invariance constructed from this matrix, namely trace psi squared and trace psi b. So the theory is specified by such a function, or in other words, it's specified by an infinite number of parameters, coefficients, in the Taylor extension of the function. Important remark is also that the described modification, well, I'll already explain to you why it's the most general natural one, but it's also the most general possible one that leads to second order equations of motion. This is important. And this relates to my second part of my talk about quantum properties of these theories. So we will see that indeed the classical theory that we described here can be obtained from a completely different argument, from completely different arguments by considering the inner noise ability properties of Pitonsky action. So let's go to slide number 26. So here the game is completely different. I will not be modifying Einstein's theory anyway. The idea is to start from Pitonsky action and think what can happen to it as a result of renormalization. We know that in the usual metric basis of game, as a result of renormalization, new terms appear in the action, namely terms containing high derivatives of the type curvature squares and higher order invariance constructed from the curvature. So similarly, Pitonsky action 8 is quite easy to see that it's not the most general action compatible with all the symmetries. One way to see that is by power counting. So one can absorb G Newton into the field to give them what can be called the canonical mass dimensions, namely the connection, connection has mass dimension 1, or dimension 1 of the length. After we absorb, he originally was constructed out of the metric, so dimension 1, but we can absorb G Newton into it and give it mass dimension 2, or dimension 1 of the length squared. And one can also absorb G into psi, which has dimension of curvature, and so we express psi in units of Planck curvature. Then it becomes dimensionless. This is a natural set of units. And then, because one has a dimensionless field, it's obvious that all powers of the field can appear under renormalization. So it can be expected that, let's go to slide number 27, that in addition to term psi dd, one will have all powers of the type psi to some power, basically any matrix constructed using powers of psi can appear in front of dd. So the theory does seem to be as non-normalizable as in the usual metric basis formulation. Namely, one seems to be getting infinite number of possible counter terms that can be added to the action. In the usual case, this is related to dimension-free Newton constants. In this case, well, basically the same reason, if we normalize the Lagrange multiplier to give it mass dimension zero, but basically it's again the same powers of the Newton constant that cause all these terms to appear. Now let's go to slide number 28. There are actually many more possible terms, because any powers of psi can appear in front of BF and FF terms. So this is content of equation 15. It's the most general Lagrangian that contains the powers of psi only is this one, 15. So it looks like it's a very complicated structure, but not quite, because we're allowed to do field of definitions. And on slide number 29, this is what is happening. So we can easily shift the BCH by multiple of F and some function H of psi, well, matrix H of psi in front of it, to get rid of the FF term. One can also rescale the B field to map the DF term into canonical form. And so after this B field definition, one gets DF term in the canonical form, and then the B term with some complicated expansion in powers of psi in front of it. Where this extension is part of the psi is related to those functions that are appearing on the previous slide by formula 17, but this is not important. The main point is that it's possible to map the action, the Lagrangian, in form 16. Now we're also free to do a redefinition of psi. This is done by number 13. So let's decompose this new psi tilde into its traceless part, which I call big phi, and the trace. Then we can call the traceless part big phi, the new psi, the renormalized psi, if you want. And then phi of psi becomes a function of phi of big phi. So after all this is done, we are on slide 31, and we get the action. The only change as compared to the action we started from is appearing the function of psi, scalar function of our Lagrange multiplier in the action. So it's clear that what we get is that theory that I described in the first part of my talk.
Kirill,
excuse
me.
Yes.
Why is it that higher powers in B and F will not appear?
Oh, they will. Oh, no, because B is a two form, so in the absence of a metric, you're only free to deal with, you need a four form to write down the Lagrangian.
Oh, I see, okay. Thank you.
If you don't have a metric, you can put in, you can anything to get out of them. Anything else apart from BB, BF, and FF.
I see, thank you.
If it was the whole story, it would be nice, and but unfortunately, this is not the whole story. Let's go on slide 32. I wanted to say what would it mean if this was the whole story. So if one, this was very simple power counting analysis, because this is not enough to conclude any sentence. One really has to start, one really has to do perturbation theory, for example, and see what does it mean at point of time. However, if it was possible to prove that these other terms that appear, and they're the only ones, it would mean that this class of theories is renormalizable in the sense that, well, even though there is infinite ambiguity in this class of theories, you need infinite number of coupling constants to fix one of the theories, the whole class is closed under renormalization group level. This would be a very strong statement, because in that case, one could hope that the UV limit of the theory, one could basically sit on this renormalization loop flow trajectory and flow in the UV, and then hope that the fixed point is, well, it's also a theory of the same type, namely that there is some psi star, that it's a limit of psi as one flows along that trajectory. again, it has to be shown that such a possibility arises. And if you compare it to the usual behavior in the metric-based formulation, in which one even has no way to write the most general action containing all possible invariants of the curvature. This is much more compact behavior, so to say. So let's go to slide number 33, where the remark is that unfortunately this is not the whole story, because terms containing derivatives of psi can also appear. For example, they are listed here. Anything on the form some power of psi d psi to the fourth is perfectly gauge invariant, is a full form, so in principle it can appear. Note that all these terms contain derivatives of psi. So if they do appear, then everything I described on the previous slide, that is true, it is much more strongly non-renormalizable. So, in spite of this, I made a conjecture that this class of physics is renormalizable in the sense described. So why? What are the reasons for such a conjecture? First of all, this is most of the optimistic scenario. One should hope for the better.
Slide 34?
Slide 34. Yes, slide 34. Okay. Second remark is that all these constituents, once you start introducing constituents containing derivatives of psi, so this drastically changes the character of the theory. One can easily show that the theory will have higher derivatives, not second derivatives anymore, and therefore more degrees of freedom. So this completely changes the character of the theory. And so one might wonder that if one starts in one class, rather nice properties with the 2D and a certain number of degrees of freedom. One might hope that renormalization will not take one inside of this class. Maybe with motivation, but it's certainly motivation. And finally, specifically the main motivation for that strong conjecture is that there is a toy theory that can be formulated. Namely, this thing is sort of related to the theory we are working with, namely B of plus and psi. If you integrate out B, you get a theory of type psi minus 1 FF. However, one cannot just directly apply perturbation theory to that theory, because there is no kinetic term, but this is a kind of pathological theory. So what one can do, though, is to replace F by cell dual part of F, where one uses some metric, background metric, to do that. This is a nice theory. I call it toy theory for this type of guarantee theory. And in that theory, one can start doing calculations. One can indeed show that, at least to one loop, no powers of psi, no derivatives of psi appear. I don't know of any argument which would prohibit them from appearing, but at least in one loop, they do not appear. So this gave me hope to expect that the same would happen in the full theory.
Yes. Question. In that toy theory, is psi constrained? For example, it's traceless.
It's traceless. But there is also the trace part, which is a function of psi. So it's you start from GR, but psi is just traceless.
Right. So this is an action also for general relativity, which you call the toy theory.
No, because you take the self-dual part of F in some background metric. So it might be related.
Something like this occurs in Capovia, Dell, and Jacobson by integrating out the B's on the
Plebanian. That's what I said. If you integrate out B, you obtain psi minus 1 FF, but no self-dual part of F is taken.
I see.
I'm modifying that theory, just replacing F by self dual part of F. in some background matrix. After that, you can start applying perturbation theory. Because now there is natural kinetic term, it's the same. The quadratic part of that theory is then just Jahn-Mills. And so one can have the usual fundamentals of Jahn-Mills, and one can start doing calculations. And so the outcome of the calculations is that no powers of deep psi appear in as counter terms. Yes, there is a question, local question, basically. No, psi field in those calculations, psi field is not quantized, but quantum only postpone integration over it till later. And if no derivatives of psi appear by integrating over A, then no derivatives will appear by integrating over psi, because the action depends on psi only, only algebraically. It's a matrix integration. It will not contribute to the derivative.
But is the action function only of the connection, so it does not depend on psi? Psi is not a dynamical variable?
Psi is, well, as I said, the action pointing is it's functional of a connection, A, curvature of a connection, A, and psi. So if you do perturbation theory in two steps. You integrate over A, over fluctuations of A, and then you integrate over fluctuations of psi. As a first step, when you do integrations over fluctuations of A, you see that no derivatives, no counter terms contain the derivatives of psi at the end. That's the statement. And after that, if you know that, then integrating over fluctuations of psi cannot introduce any derivatives.
Okay, so in 20, the left-hand side should be action S as a function of A and psi both.
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay. That's correct. As a matrix model. The question was, local question, how do you integrate over fluctuations of psi? As a function of psi, it's a matrix. Some functional of a matrix. So one can integrate in the matrices in the usual way. Anyway, I don't want to dwell too much on this, because certainly this argument is not conclusive. This is just the motivation for a certain conjecture. Namely, the conjecture that the class of fields that I described is closed. But one, to be able to settle this, one certainly has to do an honest calculation. And maybe if I have time, I'll describe you how this calculation can look like. Let's go to slide 35. So few more properties, classical properties of this class of theories. Here, next couple of slides are about Hamiltonian formulation. It turns out that the Hamiltonian formulation of this class is quite easy to obtain, basically the same way as we do with the Lebesgue action. The phase space turns out to be the same, namely it's a space of connections and densitized triads. All constraints are unmodified, except the Hamiltonian constraints. Namely, what happens for the Hamiltonian constraint is that what used to be the cohomological constant in it gets replaced by function phi of a certain trace-free tensor, which is defined by equation 22. So you see, psi here is defined, it's a function of the dynamical variables of A and the densitized triad. So the Hamiltonian constraint for this general class of theories becomes 21. More compactly, it can be stated as follows, namely, the diffeomorphism constraint is just the condition that this matrix psi is symmetric, which turns out to be equivalent to the diffeomorphism constraint, and the condition that trace of psi is an arbitrary function of trace three parts of psi is this generalized Hamiltonian constraint. So you see that generalization is quite nice, even at the level of the Hamiltonian formula. It's not drastic at all. On slide 36, degrees of freedom, it turns out that the constraint algebra also remains in first class, as it was in GR. So we have theory with the same phase space, same number of constraints, same algebra of constraints. The only thing that gets modified is that metric in the Poisson bracket of two Hamiltonian constraints But that looks like it might be diffeomorphism constraint. But certain metrics figures on the right-hand side. So that metric gets modified. But apart from that, algebra is unmodified. So, therefore, it means that all these theories have the same number of propagating degrees of freedom as in GR. And I want to emphasize that this makes this class unlike all other modifications of gravity considered in the literature. Because all other modifications either introduce higher densities, or introduce more fields, or introduce, I don't know, extra dimensions. All other modifications introduce new degrees of freedom, while this one does not. Let's go to slide number 37. Again, just to emphasize, there are two ways to describe the modification. One is, remember from the first part, that we freed the fiber metric described by B. The full B became dynamical variable. There was no longer a constraint imposed on B. So that fiber metric part of B became dynamical. And at the level of the action, or Hamiltonian, all that boils down to making the cosmological constant, cosmological function. It becomes psi dependent, or if you remember that psi was curvature, it becomes curvature dependent. So it's a really good way to think about the modification. Cosmological constant just became a function of the wild curvature, so to say. This is not quite correct, because after you do a modification, psi is no longer wild curvature, but to the first order, this is right. An interesting remark is that it suggests kind of a scenario, or, well, at least an idea about the cosmological constant problem. Remember, the cosmological constant problem is why the value of the cosmological constant that we see on large scale in cosmology, on the largest possible scale, why is this value so different from any natural value that one can think about? Because there are many natural energy scales in physics, the highest one being the Planck scale, but there are many intermediate energy scales. So why is cosmological constant so small as compared to those natural values? But now, if in this class of gravity theories, well, cosmological, what plays a role in cosmology is phi at of zero, because for homogeneous isotopic universes, psi is zero by symmetry. So what plays a role is phi of zero. But then it's not impossible that, the real theory has some function phi of psi in it. For phi at very large values of curvature, the function takes natural values. For example, at Planck curvature, it takes Planck value. But then it decreases as a function of curvature, as a function of energy. And at zero, it takes a very small value. So it seems a possible scenario in this class of gravity theories, and quite an interesting scenario. So let me go to slide number 38. I'll be really quick on this. One can also use this to reformulate this class of gravity theories as a certain sigma model. Namely, the idea here is that you should solve for all other equations, determine all other fields in terms of B. So one simply finds A in terms of B and finds the Lagrange multipliers in terms of B and substitutes the solutions into the action. One obtains sigma model like action 25, which is a functional of only B, a triple of two forms. And quite interestingly, there is a potential term for the fiber metric in it, there is a kinetic term, so it has a very nice structure. Maybe renormalization properties of these class of theories could be easier to study in this formulation. Because in this formulation, one explicitly sees the metric, because the metric GIJ, the usual space-time metric, is part of it. Anyway, let me conclude. So what I describe is an infinite class of self-dual gravity theories. Infinite class of gravity theories parameterized by a function of two variables, which I call the cosmological function, because it replaces the cosmological constant. Einstein theory is a member of this class corresponding to that function being a constant. all these things have the same number of degrees of freedom as GR. This class may be closed under renormalization rule flow. Renormalizable. This is unknown. This is a conjecture. Physics that determines, well, assuming that this is so, then we need principle that would fix this form of the function phi of psi. Possibly, this can be fixed by quantum considerations, namely renormalizability considerations. For example, that phi star at a fixed point may be used to fix the form of function. Finally, what I want to say is that these theories, in addition to space-time metric, they have non-trivial fiber metric in them, which is dynamical. On shell, it gets related to space-time metric, but in quantum theory, that will fluctuate independently. And so this theory is actually very different from usual metric-based GR as a quantum theory. Thank you.
Okay, questions?
Any questions?
Okay, I'll start off. There are a lot of questions.
This is very, very beautiful work.
Do you want to give us, you must be involved in perturbation theory calculations to try to see if your conjecture is true. Is there anything you can say as a preview to those?
Well, I actually my own. Maybe I repeat the question for the local audience. This is more an asking question of saying that I should continue doing this.
Louder.
This volume is saying that these perturbative calculations should be continued to see whether the conjecture is true or not. Well, I definitely agree, but right now I'm much more involved in testing. How this class of modified gradient theories, what are observational consequences of it? If there was two of me, I would be two things at the same time, but unfortunately I cannot. So basically for now, that work on perturbative calculations is postponed.
I'm
studying this theory, the classical one.
So tell us what about the observational consequences that you're looking at?
Oh, there are many things. Well, unfortunately, it's a whole seminar. Many things are already understood about this class of theories. They're quite easy to make compatible with, well, definitely with solar system experiments. It's quite easy to make these theories be compatible because one can simply take the function to be constant in the relevant range of curvatures. One immediately obtains GR. But then the question is, if one allows some change to function phi just by changing on for smaller curvatures, so on very large scales, can one, I don't know, get rid of dark matter, for example? Can one produce a successful cosmological scenario without dark matter? This is what the original motivation for modified gravity theories is exactly that. So it would be quite interesting to see how these class of theories behave in that regard.
Okay. There is a very relatively recent paper by a student of Bob Walls, which showed that mm-hmm. the previous modifications people had considered of
yeah.
general relativity in the context of dark matter were all ruled out just because of stability of stars.
Yes, that's correct.
So if you put
there's a question about stability for all previous modifications. All previous modifications for GR, as I said, they're quite different from this one. In particular, they tend to behave like series with higher derivatives, and so they tend to have instabilities in them.
I completely agree with you. That's why this is exciting and promising. But still, we cannot have the cake and eat it too. We cannot say that the extra term is just cosmological constant, because then you have these other problems of renormalizability and so on. If you say that the leading term is cosmological constant and then there are corrections, then these corrections have to do two things at the same time, right? One is that they have to be sufficiently significant to rescue us
mm-hmm.
From this renormalization flows. At the same time, they have to be sufficiently small not to mess up astrophysics. And so I agree that this is very different from the other higher derivative terms, but still, conceptually, the same question really comes up again.
Sorry, I didn't understand the conceptual question. Can you reformulate it?
Yeah, so the question is, you must have to make a choice of this function such that the first term is a cosmological constant, and then there are some higher terms. So you must have to make some choice of these higher terms. And then the question is, can these higher terms be small enough not to contradict astrophysical data? And yet,
actually, that's not the way I think about this function phi. So function phi, you can think about it as really function of curvature. So one should ask about its form in relevant on relevant scale, so to say. In solar system, we are inserting scale of curvatures. The scale of wild curvatures that we have access to in the solar system. And to be consistent with the observation, of course, we have to assume that in this range of curvatures, function phi is constant, or it's really very, very small. But then, in other regions, for example, in the outer curves of galaxies, the curvatures are much, much smaller, and it is there where we can assume that function phi starts changing, modified gravity. So I don't see any problems with making this theory. Basically, well, you have the whole choice of functions, so there is a lot of freedom. I must say that the rooms that were booked only till 4, and we are already 4 times, so we have to...
we're losing you, Kakirin.
Huh?
We cannot hear you.
Yeah, there's some people who want to use the room because it was only booked till 4, so I will have to... Oh, there's no video. Yeah.
Oh, one more question?
Okay, yeah, the others.
Okay, one more question is sort of the opposite of Abai's question. If you hope to explain dark matter, you're dealing not with a small correction to Einstein equations, you're dealing with a factor of 10 to 20 off rather than a small factor. And do you have any hope of explaining such large factors and still keeping within the solar system constraints?
Well, again, you have something in mind which I cannot understand.
The gravitational field or the curvature in the far reaches of a galaxy is an order of magnitude larger than it ought to be given general relativity if there is no dark matter. It's not a small correction, it's an order of magnitude.
But the curvature itself there in galaxies, wild curvature there in the quiet dome, that's the
Yes,
point.
That is the contradiction. That is the problem that Lee is pointing out. The wild curvature is very small, and yet the correction should be very large. So how can you get it?
How can you get it? Well, if you have a scale in the theory, which is of the order of that scale where the modification should kick in, well, you can get correction of order 1. Of course, you have to build in the scale. And that scale has to be because of a cosmological order.
No, I think the question is that the tension is astrophysics versus dark matter cosmology. I mean, in the solar system test, you want these corrections to be very small. So you want to say that the curvature around here is very small, and then this curvature and the corrections...
No, I want to say the curvature here is very large, actually. But in this range of curvatures in the solar system, function phi is constant. And then it starts having non-zero derivative for smaller curvatures. And, well, it's actually the derivative of this function that kind of measures departure from usual GR. So I'm assuming that derivative is of order, of order 1. Actually, it's dimensionless, so it's kind of meaningful to say it's of order 1. So derivative should be large. Which is only possible if certain scale is built into that function. But all these questions were actually studied in great detail in... I have a paper with Yuri Shtanov on Feynman's symmetric solution of this theory, where we analyzed many things, many observational consequences. And I believe most of these questions are answered there by that analysis. So we see in that analysis that it's indeed possible to have modifications of the right. If you build the right scale into the theory, into that function, then it's possible to have modifications of the right size.
But even though you had so much freedom in the choice of this function, presumably yes. It is the renormalization flow and the fixed point that is determining this function. Is that right? I'm just trying to understand the viewpoint.
Yeah, the idea, which may turn out to be wrong eventually, but the current idea is that it's the renormalization flow that should determine that function. And so one should actually, the natural choice for this function would be phi star, the endpoint of renormalization flow. One should take that function and just take that theory. That theory would be kind of, will have very appealing V properties. It will not run, so to say. And it's also obvious that in that function, if you just consider GR only, then there cannot be any other scale but the Planck scale, because there is no other scale in GR. So that function will presumably be of the order of Planck curvature at some curvatures, and then may do something. It should better go to zero for zero curvatures, or to something, well, probably to zero for small curvatures. That's the intuitive expectation for what this phi star should be. But the main point is that in pure quantum gravity, there cannot be any other scale. So in particular, there cannot be any cosmological scale. But if you couple this theory to matter, then immediately there are some scales associated with matter. And then those coupling to matter may affect running of phi and may affect the form of phi. So the idea is that there is some new physics turning on at very small curvatures and producing modifications.
Okay, so if this...
Again, this is all very preliminary ideas.
If this philosophy is correct, and in fact...
Yes.
There is actually a fixed point. But you're not saying that the fixed point is a trivial fixed point. Is that correct, first of all? It might be a non-trivial fixed point.
I don't know what
point.
Trivial means in this context. Certainly, this is a very different class of theories that was considered. It's not theories formulated in a fixed background. So there we either have trivial fixed points, quadratic actions, or some, usually UV fixed points turn out to be conformal theories. But for this class of theories, this expectation should be totally changed because there is no metric in that. So, in certain sense, it cannot be trivial fixed point.
Right.
It cannot be conformal theory.
Right. Okay. So suppose there is a fixed point in this case, then ultimately you would have a description which is all in terms of the smooth fields everywhere, right? At a fundamental level, you've got all this Lagrangian, whose coefficients are fixed by this fixed point, and all the fields in consideration are just smooth. So is it fair to say that under such a generalized renormalizable scenario, there will be no quantum geometry effects at all?
No, it would not be fair to say, because, I'll repeat your question. By the same question, if this scenario is realized, then everything will be described by smooth fields, and then would it be fair to say that there is no room for quantum geometry at all? As a classical theory, yes, this will be classically smooth fields, but we have to quantize this theory. So, I don't know, would it be fair to say that in Jan-Mills, there is no room for quantum effects?
You're bringing a Planck scale all over the place in your effective action here, right? When you're talking about...
Why?
That's what you're saying, that there is no other scale other than the Planck scale. And
in pure GR, there is no other scale.
Yeah, let's not talk about pure GR just for a second, just to make life simpler.
Yeah.
We can extend to matters. So, but the Planck scale is a quantum scale, it's not a classical scale. I mean, classically, there is no length or mass in general relativity. You need an H bar.
That's correct, yes.
So, therefore, whatever effective action you are, or the action you are writing down, ultimately, which is by making an appeal to the fixed point, would necessarily have Planck scale, would necessarily have H bar. And my idea, my understanding was that that is a full theory. And then you can ignore H bar.
There will be no G Newton. There will be no Planck scale in this theory at all. If you remember, one can reformulate this thing that G Newton never even appears. But what appears are certain fields of certain mass dimensions. And it is only when comparing those fields to the units we are using. So the G Newton can only appear if there is matter, which sends the scale for the measurement. There is no Planck scale in pure gravity either. Does that answer your question?
No, but maybe we should email or something. This will take too long. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you all.
Jorge?
Yeah, so if there are no further questions, I think we should thank Carol again.
Thank you.